And Uncle Lou couldn't handle him.
Vegas exchanged a look with his mother, who continued their tag team effort to berate me.
Elsie, everyone knows he's crazy. Shit, his nickname for years has been Crazy Larry, and he's always lived up to it. I can't believe you didn't tell me.
Honey, I know I should have told you, but at first I really didn't remember. I couldn't recall anything except waking up in the house and you being there beside me. I didn't even know I had been shot at first, I explained. They both looked confused.
So when did you remember?
Vegas asked. I don't know, maybe about a month or two ago. I turned to Chippy. You remember when I was having those bad dreams? She nodded.
Yeah, you kept waking up in a cold sweat.
Well, those dreams were about me getting shot. I couldn't see who it was the first few nights, but eventually, more and more, details started coming back to me, until I realized it was Larry. The memory of those nightmares still haunted me. Chippy's face softened.
Okay, so why didn't you tell me?
I don't know. Truth is, I wanted to. But in hindsight, I thought it was the best thing for all of us to keep quiet. I figured Larry shot me and maybe he'd just go away. I mean, we hadn't heard from him since. Chippy shook her head.
You really thought that you were doing the family a favor by not mentioning that your brother shot and almost killed you?
I wouldn't exactly put it that way, Chippy, but I glanced over at Vegas, who looked disgusted. He seemed to have no sympathy for me or my story. See, I know our boys in Paris. They could say whatever they want, but if they knew Larry had shot me, they would have hunted him down and killed him, or he would have killed them. Vegas lowered his head, most likely because he knew I was telling the truth. So let's be honest. What good would that have done our family? Vegas exhaled loudly, but I think I was finally getting through to him.
So how the hell did he get out, Pop?
It was your cousin Curtis, I explained. 2 years ago, he had himself placed as Larry's next of kin and administrator of his affairs with the hospital instead of me. I knew about it, but I never thought it was a big deal. He's Larry's son, after all, and he'd seen firsthand what his father was capable of. Never in a million years did I think he'd orchestrate his father's release. Again, Chippy stared at me and shook her head.
So you gave the approval for your brother, a homicidal maniac who's been locked up in a mental institution for years, to have his son, who worships the ground he walks on, be his administrator?
I cringed with embarrassment as I admitted how badly I'd miscalculated the situation. It doesn't sound too bright now, but yes, that's exactly what I did. But in my defense, Larry had been getting treatment for years. He's a damn near 65-year-old man. I didn't think there would be any harm in his son taking over his care. It had been a while since he had an episode or an incident.
Well, it almost got you killed,
Chippy said angrily.
This is what happens when you go rogue and we don't act together as a team, Elsie.
I know that, Charlotte, but he's my brother. All I wanted was for him to live out his days happily. I was damn near crying, but somehow I straightened my spine and found my resolve again. I'll take care of this. If I have to put him down myself, I'll take care of it. I promise. And I meant what I said.
Elsie.
Chippy walked over and put her arms around my shoulders.
Sending Larry away was the best thing you could have done for him. I know you love your brother. Hell, I love him too. But he is a danger to our family. You can't handle him by yourself. This is something we have to do together.
Ma's right. We have to handle Uncle Larry the same way we handle everything else, as a family, Vegas said with finality. I nodded my head in agreement. Okay, from here on out, we do it as a family.
Vegas, 8.
What do you mean I can't go?
Orlando yelled, jumping out of his seat on the sofa. I'd called a family meeting after Mom and Pop had made it clear they wanted me to head up the effort to neutralize Uncle Larry and keep our family safe. Unfortunately, on top of the Uncle Larry situation, Junior had just come home with news that he'd seen Ruby and Orlando's son, Vincent, in the grill. O was losing it, because I had just told him I was putting together a team to find his son, but he couldn't be on it.
I'm sorry, bro, but there's no way in hell you send in a team to look for my son without me,
Orlando continued.
Key words here being my son.
He was now in my face, looking like he wanted to punch me. Which is exactly why you're not going, O. You're too involved in this, and we can't afford for you to be flying off the handle, getting all caught up in your feelings. Orlando was a smart guy, and he could handle himself. But like the rest of us Duncans, he could be hot-headed and stubborn at times.
This is bullshit, and you know it, Vegas. If this was about Nevada, nobody could stop you from killing everyone on that damn island.
If this were Nevada, I'd want the right people for the job. This situation must be handled like a surgeon, not the Unabomber. You're going to have to trust me on this one, O. Besides, I've got other things for you in Paris to do. He turned to my father. Pop, will you please tell Vegas that I'm going? My father shook his head.
I can't do that, son, because he's right. Just like I'm too emotionally involved with Larry, you're too emotionally involved with Ruby and your son. Vegas has got a plan. Let him play it out.
Yeah, but his plan doesn't include me.
Once again, he was in my face. If he was anyone else, I would have taken him down. But I let him have his moment.
Don't do this to me, man. My son is the most important thing in the world to me. Ruby and Vinny have been keeping him from me. I just want to see my boy.
And you will. But this ain't just about Ruby and Vinny Dash. We also gotta worry about a whole posse of Jamaicans who work for them. If we don't do this right, people could get killed. People like your son.
Sit down, Orlando, and let him finish,
my father said. Orlando did what he was told, but he wasn't happy about it.
What I want to know is why you send in Rio to Jamaica instead of me. How much sense does that make? I'm the one who's trained to handle situations like this, not him. The only thing Rio can do in Jamaica is sit on a beach and get a tan,
Paris said, pouting.
Don't do that.
Rio rolled his eyes at Paris, wagging a finger.
Don't throw me under the bus because you're mad. You trained your way and I trained mine. I'm a Duncan. I know how to handle myself.
In some ways, my sister did have a point, but so did Rio. My younger brother was a party animal and didn't have the formal training that most of us had, but he had proven himself to be valuable in the past, and I felt confident in sending him along with Sasha. I'm ready. When do we leave? Sasha finally spoke up.
Tomorrow night, I told her.
Great. That gives me time to run to the mall right quick and grab a few last-minute items.
Rio smiled deviously.
Sasha, would you like to join me?
Sorry, Ree. I've got an appointment with Jenny, Sasha replied. Orlando glared at me as I continued explaining what was going to happen.
Sasha, Rio, and Daryl will leave tomorrow night for Negril.
Harris, I need you to arrange for a discreet Airbnb where they can hold up,
along with a few of our best people.
Daryl's going?
Paris's voice became 2 octaves higher.
Yeah, I've already spoken with him, and he's making arrangements as we speak. He knows that island, and the people like the back of his hand. He lived there for a few years, remember?
What does that have to do with me?
Orlando snapped.
Orlando, I promise. I'm going to get your son back. You've got to trust me. That's my nephew, too. It's family.
Orlando stood up and announced,
I don't care what you say. I'm going, whether you like it or not. I'll charter my own damn plane if I have to.
Me too. I'm with you, Orlando. That's my nephew.
Paris stood beside him. Keep talking like that and I'll lock both of your asses up in the basement, I said to her.
You got your son. Now I'm going to get mine. Orlando shouted at me.
I looked over at Nevada, who was taking it all in, not saying a word. My son was quiet a lot of the time, but that didn't mean he wasn't paying attention. He studied everything that went on in this family, and I was sure that one day his observation skills would serve us all well.
Orlando and Paris, both of you sit your asses down, my mother yelled,
and the room became quiet. They stopped complaining and took their seats, and everyone turned their attention to Ma.
Orlando, your brother is right. You would be spotted as soon as you stepped off the plane. Vinny Dash would do everything in his power to hurt you, or worse, do something to your son. Let Vegas handle it. He has a plan in place, and that's how it's going to be.
Well, if they're going to do that, what do you have me doing? Paris asked, still sounding pissed off.
You and O are going to Waycross, Georgia, I said.
Waycross? What the fuck is in Waycross? Sasha and Rio are going to Jamaica with Daryl and you're sending my ass to Waycross? How unfair is that?
She stood up and stormed off in true Paris fashion. This was exactly the reason she wasn't on the Jamaican team. The last thing I needed was her emotional ass wreaking havoc. The rest of the family members began filing out of the dining room and into the kitchen, leaving only Nevada and me.
Papa? He got up from his chair and walked over to where I stood.
Yes, son, I answered.
I want to help. I want to be on a team.
He was only a teenager, but he was nearly my height. Looking at him was like looking in a mirror. I placed my hands on his shoulders and stared at him.
You are part of the team. You handle computers and communications.
No, I mean part of the assault team, going on family missions. I used to do stuff for my mom.
I know you did, son. But for right now, I need you to stay home and coordinate the computers and communications. Your time will come sooner than you think.
He looked disappointed, but he didn't argue.
Okay. Hey, I promise you this. One day, you will be ready. One day, you're going to be the head of the team.
My son looked at me and smiled. I grabbed him and pulled him close to me, knowing that my words weren't just for him, but they were for me. I would make sure that before that time came, he would be well prepared.
Larry. 9. Good afternoon. I'm here to see Lee, I told the tiny hostess as I walked into Ming's garden, followed by my two boys and Mama. Ming's was a quaint restaurant, located in the heart of Chinatown, right off Canal Street. The smell of garlic noodles, fried wontons, and shrimp filled my nostrils, and my stomach grumbled, even though I wasn't hungry. Tell him Larry Duncan is here to see him. The hostess, dressed in a red kimono, shook her head at me. No Lee here. I glanced around the sparsely filled dining room and gave the woman a half smile. Yeah, he's here. I know that he's here. He's always here at 1 p.m. That's what time his family conducts business over fish and rice.
No Lee.
The woman's voice got slightly louder, and she took a few steps near the bar, where an Asian man was watching us closely. She was starting to get on my nerves with this he's not here bullshit. Look, I don't have time for this shit. Now, tell Lee that Larry Duncan is here to see him. I raised my voice to get her attention, but the bitch kept staring at me. Okay, you want to play games? Then we can play games. I was just about to reach into my waistband and take out my pistol when the bartender lifted a phone and spoke some Asian gibberish into it. He motioned to another man who was seated at the bar, whispering something in his ear. The man's eyes went from him, then back to us, and then they spoke some more of that gibberish. The man stood up and went to the back of the restaurant and returned a few moments later. He said something to the hostess, who nodded and headed directly to us.
My apologies for the confusion. Lee will see you shortly. Please, follow me.
We followed her past the bar, through the small kitchen, and into a small, dimly lit room. There was an empty table with several chairs around it. The hostess gestured for us to take a seat on one side of the table, and then she left. I sat in the middle, and Kenny sat in the chair to my left. Curtis went to sit in the seat to my right, but before he could sit down, I snatched him up by the collar, slapping him hard upside the head. "Since when do you sit to my right when your grandmother's around? You know better than that, Kurt. Don't you fucking embarrass me in here," I snapped angrily. "Now apologize to your grandmother." Curtis glanced at me, then my mother, pulling out her chair so that she could sit down.
"Sorry, Grandma Betty." "It's all right, baby. You know your granny loves you."
She sat down, glaring at me.
"I don't know why you always so hard on Curtis. Between the two of them, you know he's the only one you can rely on."
My mother loved all her grandkids, but she had a special fondness for Curtis because he was her first. Curtis took a seat beside Kenny, who was staring at me with his eyebrows all knotted up. He was probably upset that I'd let his grandmother talk shit about him. Another woman entered the room and smiled politely.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Duncan. Can I get you anything to eat or drink? Compliments of Mr. Lee Cheng."
She seemed to be a bit friendlier than the hostess. "Bourbon," I replied, "and 2 Hennessy on the rocks for the boys."
"Get me a beer,"
Mama said. "And a beer," I added.
"Make sure it ain't that sake bullshit either,"
Mama whispered. "Real beer, you understand?"
"Yes,"
the waitress said, and scurried out the door. "Listen, Ma, you know how these Asian cats are about their culture. They don't believe in doing business with women, so I'ma do all the talking. Understood?" I looked over at my mama, who didn't seem pleased with the idea, but thankfully she didn't fuss like I thought she would.
Yeah, Dad,"
Curtis nodded.
"Fine with me,"
Kenny shrugged. A few minutes later, the woman returned with our drinks and some fried dumplings.
"Larry Duncan, how very nice to see you.
It's been a long time since we've seen each other," Lee Cheng said when he walked into the room shortly after the waitress left. There were 2 other men with him, including the one who had been at the bar. Lee took a seat directly across from me, and they sat on each side of him. "Lee, I was starting to think you were about to pull some shit on me, especially when old girl started saying you weren't here." He offered his hand across the table, and I took it.
"No, no. We have to be wary in times like this. I would never pull anything on a man like yourself."
Lee still had that bullshit smirk that just made you want to shoot his ass.
"So, to what do I owe the pleasure of this visit?"
"I would like to do business with you," I told him. "You know, start out small, maybe 15-20 keys to start."
"You know, I am always interested in doing business with the Duncans. Of course, I would like a larger order, but we can start with 20 kilos to rebuild business."
Old Lee looked happier than a pig in shit. "Good. So, how much we talking per key?"
"I can wholesale them to you for $30,000 a kilo. That should give you plenty of margin for profit."
"That's what I'm talking about, Lee. Always good doing business with you." I felt Mama's hand on my back, and the boys were nodding their approval.
"You as well, my friend.
So, your brother will send payment in the usual way?" He stood up. "No, my brother won't do shit, but my sons will bring by your cash in 3 days. I stood up to offer Lee my hand, but he was too busy glancing back and forth between himself and the 2 guys on either side of him. "Is there a problem?" I asked.
Yes, a slight problem, but nothing a phone call with your brother won't clear up,
Lee replied, his forehead wrinkled up like he was really concerned about something. What do you mean? Why do you need to talk to my brother?
We no longer do business in cash. We need to have it wired and confirmed.
Your brother knows that, he said. Well, you're not dealing with my brother. You're dealing with me, I snapped, leaning over the table. And since when is cash no fucking good?
Since 9/11. The world is very dangerous for men in our profession. But your brother knows this. He is the one who set up the system of offshore payment.
Lee looked confused.
This can all be straightened out with a phone call to him. I knew this shit was going to happen. You should have let me talk to these motherfuckers,
Mama said, and rolled her eyes at me. This deal doesn't have shit to do with LC. It's me that you're doing business with. Me. I jabbed a finger into my chest for emphasis.
Yes, I understand that now, Larry. However, this isn't the way we usually do business. Because of the war between Sal Dash and LC, we lost much business and don't want any trouble. I just have to make sure that I'm not involving myself in something that will be detrimental to my business. A simple call to your brother will resolve that, and we will be able to conduct business, Lee explained.
Mama leaned over and whispered to me,
Fuck him. Let's go. I can already see whose side he's on.
I'm sorry. But that's unacceptable, Lee, I replied. Mama and I stood, and the boys followed suit. It's too bad, too, because we could have made a lot of money together.
I do not understand your objection to a simple phone call to your brother.
Well, maybe you'll understand this, I smirked, buttoning my suit jacket as I ordered. Curtis, Kenny, kill these motherfuckers. Lee's eyes grew large as Curtis pulled out his silent Glock without hesitation and pulled the trigger. It was Kenny that I was concerned about, but he didn't hesitate either, discharging his firearm until all three men were slumped over. Good shooting, I told the boys. Mama nodded her approval as she headed for the door. I followed behind her until she stopped, glancing back at the boys.
Those two just gonna stand there?
Mama asked. Neither one of my boys had moved. They just stared at the three dead bodies sprawled across the room with blood seeping from their heads. At first, I thought they were feeling some kind of way about taking a life for the first time. But then I realized they weren't just staring. They were smirking. You might even call it gawking. Curtis stuck out his fist, and Kenny bumped it with his fist, and they both laughed. Damn. Talk about a chip off the old block. Hey, they're not gonna get any deader. Let's go, I ordered. I'm getting hungry for some real food. Come on, I'll buy you boys a steak. We all walked out of the restaurant the same way we'd walked in, ignoring the hostess, who ran past us toward the small kitchen entrance near the bar.
Sasha, 10. This color you like? Jenny, my favorite technician, asked, as she held up the bottle of nail polish. Yes, that's perfect, I told her, then took a sip of my champagne, which happened to be the same color as the polish. Jenny began prepping the water in the porcelain bowl in front of me. When it was ready, I eased my feet inside and began to relax. I don't know what felt better, the buttery soft leather chair I was sitting in, the feel of Jenny's hands massaging my calves, or the satisfying anticipation of my upcoming trip to the islands. Normally, I worked as a team with Paris, using our beauty and charm, along with our skills as assassins, to our advantage. Over the years, I had proven my worth to Uncle Elsie and the Duncan family, and I understood Vegas's reasoning behind sending me solo instead. Not trying to take anything away from her, because my cousin was good at what she did, but she had a lack of self-control that had put the family in jeopardy on more than one occasion. Being chosen to go to Jamaica without her was my opportunity to show the family that I wasn't just Paris's little sidekick, but I was just as much, if not more, of an asset to the family business. Is that Rihanna? I heard someone whisper. I think it's her. No, I just looked at her Instagram. She just looks like her. The nail bar was the place for not only the elite and famous to come and be pampered, but anyone else who could secure a coveted appointment and afford the costs. I was a regular customer who indulged weekly. My diamond rose manicures and pedicures were essential to my well-being, and the price tag was small change to me. I was just about to close my eyes and take a quick nap when my cell phone began ringing. Hello?
What's up, Heifer? Where the hell y'all at? Rio asked.
Rio, you so damn crazy. I'm getting my nails and feet done.
Let me speak to Paris right quick. I tried calling and she didn't answer. And she didn't respond to my text either.
She's not here, and I haven't talked to her either. I sighed. I had tried calling Paris to see if she wanted to come with me to the salon, but she sent me straight to voicemail.
Oh, that little bitch is really in her feelings about this Jamaica trip, huh?
Rio laughed.
Well, she'll get over it. Want to meet me at the mall when you finish? I got some last-minute stuff to pick up.
I don't know. If Paris finds out we're hanging out without her, she's gonna really be pissed, I told him.
So what? She's a big girl. Besides, how's she gonna know?
Rio, you know damn well you can't go nowhere these days without putting it on social media. You need to chill with that shit. You know it ain't safe. Or have you forgotten the danger your ass was in a few weeks ago?
I warned him as I pulled up my IG account and went to Rio's page.
Sure enough, there was a picture of him posing in his car with the caption, hashtag retail therapy.
I'm hardly ever on there anymore.
I laughed. Rio, stop lying. I'm looking at the picture you posted 10 minutes ago.
Shopping don't count.
You stupid. I'll call you when I leave here, I said, and ended the call. Again, I leaned back and closed my eyes.
Is that the new Chanel boy bag Kim K was rocking?
I heard the Inquisitor from earlier ask.
Looks like it, but it can't be real, though. I heard they only made 100.
I think that one is real. Look at her. She's designer from head to toe.
That's one bad bitch.
I looked over to see who they were speaking of, and my eyes fell on a well-dressed woman entering the spa. She was the epitome of class and elegance in her YSL suit, Louboutin heels, and Chanel purse, which was undoubtedly real.
Hello.
She walked over and sat in the chair right next to mine, and all I could do was shake my head and frown.
Is this seat taken?
No, but there are plenty other empty seats in here. You might be more comfortable in one of them, I replied, gulping down the rest of my drink. Jenny motioned for one of the attendants to bring me a refill.
No, this will do just fine.
She removed her Louis Vuitton sunglasses and placed them in her lap.
How are you? It's been a while since you stopped by the house.
Let's not do this, okay, Mom? Deidre, another technician, walked over and handed her a glass of champagne, then proceeded to remove the designer heels from her feet.
So nice to see you again, Ms. Donna, she said with a smile. The usual today? I'll have whatever my beautiful daughter is having.
At the sound of the word daughter, my head snapped in her direction.
What do you want? I hissed.
She was totally ruining my mood.
How about a meaningful relationship with my only daughter?
I almost threw up in my mouth because she said that shit with conviction.
How about we don't and say we did?
I refused to look at her.
Why are you being like this, Sasha?
Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Jenny and Deidre eyeing each other with concern.
I'm not being like anything.
I shook my head at her.
I made sure that you've had the best of everything your entire life. Your father...
Don't, I interrupted her.
Don't what?
Don't talk about my father. You have no right. That man raised me, and he and his family gave me everything a girl could ever want. I could feel the anger building in my chest, and I tried calming down. I was grateful when the attendant finally showed up with my glass of champagne. Again, I gulped it down, praying that the alcohol would calm my nerves.
So don't talk about my father. You're beneath him.
Sasha, despite what you may think,
I loved your father, and I always will.
She tried to reach over and touch my hand, but I snatched it away.
If you loved him so much, why did you leave him with a 5-year-old to be with another man?
She stared at me like I had 2 heads, just like she always did when I asked that question.
I don't think this is the time or place for this conversation. Why don't you come over to the house? We can have dinner. I'll make your favorites, and we can talk, she suggested.
Sorry, I've got an early flight tomorrow for work.
Flight to where? Anywhere good?
I didn't answer her question. I was not about to make bullshit small talk with her when our issues were so deep.
Oh, you're ignoring me now? She said. I've got nothing to say to you until you answer my question. You said you want to talk? Then talk, here and now. I challenged her.
I knew my mother was all about appearances, especially public ones. Airing out dirty laundry in front of others was making her uncomfortable. She looked at the 2 women working on our feet, who were diligently trying to act as if they were not eavesdropping. I could see the strain on her face, and it was somewhat gratifying to me. She didn't want to address our real problems, and I didn't want to pretend we were cool with each other. So we both stayed silent for a minute. Finally, she let out a huge sigh and said,
"Fine. The relationship between your father and me had always been a complicated one. Our breakup had nothing to do with me not loving him. Obviously, because every time you were broke, I'd wake up to you in his bed. But that never lasted long, did it? You'd milk him for 40, 50 grand, then disappear again." I looked over at her. She was still beautiful to me, despite how much I despised her and what she had done to our family. We stared at one another.
"I needed you, but you were never there for me. So if it wasn't Daddy, I guess it was me."
She scrunched up her face like she was in pain. Good. I hoped I'd hurt her feelings, given how badly her abandonment had hurt me.
"Sweetheart, no. It definitely had nothing to do with you," she finally said. "It had everything to do with him being a Duncan."
"What the hell does that even mean?" I asked. "You knew he was a Duncan when you married him."
"I did. Things just became more complicated over the years."
"Yeah, I bet they did when he cut you off and stopped letting you spend all his money."
I shook my head.
"Jenny, I think it's time we do my nails."
"That's not what happened. Those Duncans are brainwashing you against me."
I chuckled. "Uncle Elsie talks bad about a lot of people, but you're not one of them. So brainwashing is out."
I lifted my feet and Jenny began to dry them.
I glanced around the salon and noticed that the women who'd commented on my mother's bag when she came in were over there now, trying to look nonchalant as they ear-hustled our whole conversation. My mother must have noticed them, too, because she tried to end it real quick.
"Sasha, this isn't the time or the place for this," she said again. "We'll finish this conversation another time. Why don't you come over to my house on Friday?"
"Sorry, I can't," I told her. "I told you I have a flight to Jamaica tomorrow."
"Really, Sasha? Can't you just postpone your vacation?"
"This isn't a pleasure trip. It's work," I said.
"What kind of work?"
"Duncan business. And you said it yourself. You can't handle being a Duncan, so stay out of it," I said with finality.
Ruby, 11. Kingston was the last place in the world I wanted to be. Not only did it hold too many painful childhood memories, but being there also was a constant reminder that my older brother Randy was dead. The neighborhood that we were staying in was only a few blocks away from where Randy and I grew up, and although it was a little nicer and the house we were staying in was better, it was still in the middle of Tivoli Gardens, a dilapidated area filled with crime and violence. According to Vinny, being in the middle of the shantytown was the safest place for us, because we were protected by the gangs and thugs he did business with. I didn't feel safe, though. Most of the time, I felt like a prisoner, despite being told I could come and go as I pleased. What good is leaving the house if you don't have anywhere to go but a slum? So I never left the house, which was manned by several so-called security members that Vinny made sure were present at all times. Having them in our home only added to my frustration. They were loud, annoying, and made themselves a little more than comfortable. Sometimes I didn't know if they were there to protect us or just to smoke all the weed Vinny kept around. Luckily, my son made a few friends with some children from next door, and I could watch and listen to them playing in the front yard from our bedroom window. "Throw me the ball," I heard Vincent say. "Come closer. You can't make it from way over there," one of the boys yelled as he stood in front of a plastic goal holding a soccer ball. "I bet I can," Vincent yelled back and ran a little farther across the yard. "Cannot," another boy said. "Throw it," Vincent said. The boy threw the ball at Vincent, and he caught it, then placed it on the ground. He eyed the goal and then took a step back and kicked the ball. They all watched as the ball went up in the air and soared across the yard, stopping short of where it was supposed to go. A look of disappointment came across Vincent's face, and the other boys began laughing at him. "Shut up," Vincent told them. "I told ya, I knew you couldn't make it," they teased. "I don't care. My daddy is gonna help me when he gets home anyway," Vincent said. "I'm going to kick it even farther." "Where is your daddy now? Where does he live?" the boy asked him. "He lives here with us. He's the boss," Vincent bragged. "That's not your daddy," one of the boys told him, and I felt my stomach drop. "He is too my daddy," Vincent insisted. "He's a white man. You're not white, you're black," another boy said. Unable to listen to the conversation any longer, I yelled out the window, "Vincent, come inside. It's time to eat." I took off running down the stairs and out the back door. When I made it to the yard, the boys had all scattered and my son was standing alone, soccer ball in hand. "Come on, it's time to eat," I said, putting my arm around his shoulder and pulling him toward me. He looked up at me and asked, "Mummy, where is my daddy?" "He's out working. He will be home in a little while," I told him, hoping that would be enough to satisfy him. Of course, it wasn't. Those boys had planted the seed in his mind, and now he would want answers. "Marco said that he's not my daddy because he's a white man, and I'm not white." Vincent had a confused look. I inhaled deeply. I knew that this conversation would happen eventually. However, I had hoped it would take place much later. "Vincent, he is your daddy. You are his son, and he loves you very much. You know that, right?" Vincent nodded at me, and then he said, "But he is not black like me. So how?" I tried to answer in terms his young mind would understand. "There is a difference between a father and a daddy. A father is a man who helps create a baby in a mother's stomach. A daddy is a man who loves you and protects you and takes care of you. He is your daddy, Vincent." He asked the next logical question. "So, who is my father?" If I didn't answer, he would keep pestering me until I did. So again, I answered him, trying to keep it short and simple. "Your father lives in New York. He's a powerful man who is also very dangerous." His eyes widened. "Like the Duncans?" I had tried to shield him over the years, but he had overheard many conversations and arguments between me and Vinny about Orlando's family. As far as my son was concerned, the Duncans were the definition of bad guys. "Yes, but you don't have to be afraid, because your daddy is going to make sure that you are safe." I leaned down and kissed him on the cheek. "Now, go inside and wash up for dinner." Vincent opened the back door and went inside. I could hear his small feet running up the steps as I walked into the kitchen. I stopped, suddenly overwhelmed by the smell, which was so strong it almost made me nauseous. I followed it into the garage, where three men were smoking and tossing dice.
What the hell is that smell? What the hell y'all doing in my house? Have you lost your damn minds?
I screamed so loud that one of the men dropped the brown cigarillo he had just placed to his lips.
My son is right upstairs. What the hell is the matter with you? We're not in your house. We out here away from you and the boy. Why you out here clowning? Clowning? If you don't get the hell away from here, I swear I will. What's wrong? What's going on out here?
Vinny's voice came from behind me. I could hear you yelling as soon as I walked in the door.
Vinny, they out here smoking ganja in my house with our son inside. They got to go.
I brushed past him and walked back inside.
Ruby, wait.
Come here, he called after me. A few seconds later, I felt his hand on my arm. Ruby, you can't be yelling at the help like that.
Help? Who the hell are they helping, Vinny? They don't do nothing but sit around eating all the food, watching TV, running their mouths all day long, and smoking. I don't need help. They got to go now.
I snatched away from him.
They can't go. They're here to protect you and Vincent while we're here. I don't even want to be here, Vinny. I hate this place. You say you want us safe, but you bring us here in the middle of a fucking war zone. My brother and I left this place to get away from this shit, and now I'm right back where I started. You want me and your son safe? Then you should have found us a place in Discovery Bay. We've got money to afford it,
I spat at him.
Ruby, calm down. I told you we're only here temporarily, until I make some moves and get everything situated. I got some shit lined up, trust me. Think about it. If we woulda went to Discovery Bay, those white folks would be all in our business and talking up a storm if anyone came around asking questions. The Duncans would be sure to find us there. And shit, anyone else looking? Is that what you want?
Vinny asked. I thought about what he said, but I didn't respond.
I'm going to get us out of here. But for now, this is where we have to be.
And them? I motioned toward the door leading to the garage.
I'll talk to them. But they gotta be here too. There's no way I'm leaving my wife and son alone. I love you too much, and I have to know you're protected, Ruby.
Vinny pulled me close and kissed me. I knew he meant well, and had we still been in the grill, I might have felt the same passion that he kissed me with. But although I kissed him back, the only thing I felt in my heart was worry.
LC, 12. After a quick stop at the security gate, we pulled into a gated neighborhood in Manhasset, Long Island, in three black SUVs like we were a presidential motorcade. Being a man of discretion, of course you know I hated this, but I had no choice. Despite my vehement objection, Chippy had Vegas place a security detail of six men on me any time I left the compound. I did understand that they were doing it for my own good, and I had to set an example from the top that I was taking the situation seriously. But that didn't change the fact that I hated it. The SUVs pulled to a stop in front of an impressive Tudor-style house. The passenger side rear door was opened, and I stepped out. All six men of my detail were posted on either side of me, looking like they just auditioned for Men in Black. "Mr. Duncan is Vegas," said Willie, my new driver, as he handed me a cell phone. I took the phone from him and placed it to my ear. "Yes, son." "Pop, I just got confirmation that Uncle Larry is definitely in New York." Vegas's voice was filled with anxiety. "Confirmed how?" I asked as the front door of the house opened. "He killed Lee Chang, his brother, and his uncle this afternoon," he replied. "What the fuck? We don't even do business with Lee anymore." I said as a female figure appeared in the open door. Her long hair was neatly pulled back into a tight chignon. She was wearing high heels and a gauzy negligee. And on her face she wore a pair of large designer sunglasses. For a woman her age, she was sexy as hell. Once she was sure she had everyone's attention, she began to pose. Apparently he was trying to do business with him, and it didn't go so well from what I was told. Vegas replied. Does his family understand that we had nothing to do with it? I asked. I tried to explain the best I could to his son, Pop, and for now, he's cool. But that doesn't mean he won't change his mind once it all sinks in. I mean, look at it from his side. The guy's father and uncles are dead at the hands of the Duncans. Doesn't matter if Uncle Larry's with us or not. He's still a Duncan, and everyone knows he's your brother. Yeah, I know. I bit my lip as I continued to watch the woman in the doorway. She had always been naturally flirtatious, so I couldn't tell if she was posing for me or for my men. Put the word out on the street that Larry's the one who shot me. Put $100,000 on his head dead and $1,000,000 on his head for anyone who brings him and the boys to us alive. That will work. Good thinking, Pop. Yep, I come up with a good idea occasionally, I said, and we both chuckled. Hopefully it'll keep these trigger-happy motherfuckers from killing my brother and his sons until we can get his ass back in a hospital. I guess. We'll see. Vegas didn't sound optimistic. Yeah, I guess we will. Look, son, I gotta go. Keep me posted. Sure, Pop. I headed up the walkway, followed by my men, half of whom had one eye on me and one eye on the woman in the doorway. When I reached her, she leaned over and gave me a light kiss on the cheek, which I didn't reciprocate, mostly because of the heavy smell of alcohol on her breath. She stepped aside in an obvious gesture for me to enter, but I stayed where I was.
Good morning. You're looking well for a man who was shot 6 months ago. How are you feeling, Elsie?
I took a deep breath. Better to be cordial than nasty, Elsie. I'm fine, and I wanted to thank you for the support you gave my family while I was incapacitated, Donna. Chippy told me you stopped by every day. You didn't have to do that, considering our past, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate your saying that. However, we are a family, and family sticks together when times are tough. Isn't that what you always say?
Yes, I do say that, I replied half-heartedly. There were times that I still couldn't believe that Donna, my ex-fiancé, whom I'd left standing at the altar to marry Chippy, had somehow ended up married to my older brother Lou. At first, I had questioned their relationship, and so had everyone else. But after a while, nobody even blinked when he announced they were getting hitched and she was becoming my sister-in-law. Of course, that didn't change the fact that I am particularly like spending time around her. And Chippy surely didn't like it. Unfortunately, our complicated family arrangements made it necessary to do so from time to time, even now that Lou was deceased. She looked past me at my men, eyeing them like fresh meat. Donna fancied herself some type of cougar.
So? She said. You must have a lot going on when you show up with 6 men to come see me. What's going on?
I ignored her question. Listen, Donna, you called and said you needed to talk to me, and it was urgent, so I'm here. Now what do you want, and why are you dressed like that?
Because I'm at home, and I like to be comfortable when I'm home. Your men don't seem to mind.
She was back to posing again. I turned back and looked at my bodyguards. They tried to look away, but some let their eyes fall back on her. Well, I mind, Put some damn clothes on. You're embarrassing yourself. Even with the sunglasses on, I could see the slight sneer as she cut her eyes at me.
I didn't ask you here to argue or be ridiculed, Elsie. Why don't you and your men come on in and have some coffee? I've made some mimosas for those who don't mind a little alcohol in the morning.
My men are fine right where they are, and so am I. So let's get on with this, shall we? I checked my watch. I don't have a lot of time. What do you want? She stiffened her demeanor.
Well, I was hoping this was going to be a friendly meeting, but I can see that I was wrong.
She took the shades off and looked in my eyes.
What I want is for you to stop putting my child in harm's way. That's what I want.
Your child. I frowned. Lay off the mimosas, Donna. They're starting to make you say things you really don't mean.
No, they make me say exactly what I mean.
She stood up straight, trying to show confidence.
So listen to me and listen good. I want you to stop using my daughter for your fucking underhanded illegal business. I already lost Lou to your bullshit. I'm not gonna lose Sasha to it, too.
I have to admit, I was a little relieved. For a second there, I thought she was talking about something entirely different. But now I had to figure out where the fuck this was coming from. She had never complained about Sasha participating in the family business. So this sudden change took me by surprise. Sasha is a grown-ass woman. She can make her own decisions. And don't you dare act like you even care about my brother's death. You went out of your way to make him miserable when he was alive. She shook her head, adamantly.
That's a damn lie, and you know it. Lou made himself miserable chasing behind you and Larry. It didn't have shit to do with me. If he'd listen to me, he'd be alive today.
I'm not going to stand out here and argue with you, Donna, I warned. Lou and Donna had hung in there for quite a few years. I'd never seen him happier than when she gave birth to Sasha and gave him a child. I'd also never seen him more upset than when he caught her cheating with a man half his age. Donna's betrayal damn near destroyed him, and from that point on, her relationship with the family varied from cordial to strained. We both know the truth. You broke Lou's fucking heart. I could see the shame in her eyes, but typical Donna, she wouldn't back down or admit fault.
I'm not arguing, Elsie. I'm just stating facts. I loved Lou Duncan, but he loved you, Larry, and Levi more, and I just stopped trying to compete. I was his wife. I shouldn't have had to come after anyone. He should have put me before you or your stupid-ass family business.
Don't, okay? Just don't. He put you first. Why do you think he worked so hard? You never had to work or ask for anything, Donna, because Lou provided everything for you. But none of that mattered once you met that pretty boy, Mark. Mentioning her infidelity to my brother was always a sure way to get her to shut up. And it worked this time, too. She tried to end the conversation in a hurry.
Just leave my child out of your family's bullshit before she gets shot like you or killed like her father.
Donna looked me straight in the eye and said,
'Cause I'm warning you, if anything happens to her, it's gonna be hell to pay.
Her threats meant nothing to me. I'd known Donna for years, and she had no power to make me do anything. Like I said, Sasha is a grown-ass woman who can handle her own affairs. You need to take this up with her, but let's make something clear. If she didn't work for me, she'd be working for one of these cartels or mercenary outfits. Her life would be much more dangerous. She knows what it means to be a Duncan. Lou made sure to teach her that. There's nothing you can do about it. You should have been a mother when you had the chance.
Fuck you! I'm a good mother. My children have always had the best of everything. I made sure of that.
Really? I chuckled, determined not to be undermined by the authoritative tone of her voice. I knew when she called requesting to speak with me alone that it was going to be some bullshit, and she hadn't disappointed. Going to Toys R Us on Christmas and birthdays doesn't constitute being a good mother. She glared at me, her eyes full of resentment.
You're traveling down a slippery road, Elsie, a road these bodyguards won't be able to protect you from.
I could feel my blood pressure rising, and the words of my doctor echoed in my head, telling me to avoid stress. That was a sure sign that it was time for me to leave. Goodbye, Donna.
We're not done yet.
Yes, we are. You said what you had to say. I listened, and now I'm leaving. As far as I'm concerned, this conversation is over.
Elsie, one thing I learned from you and your brother is that family is everything. And you get to a point where you stop at nothing to protect them at all costs, sometimes hurting others in the process. So in an effort to protect my family, here's what's going to happen. You're going to back the hell away from Sasha, encourage her to maybe spend a little time with her mother.
I laughed out loud. You have lost your damn mind. Sasha is my family, too. I'm not telling her shit.
Oh, you're telling her.
And if I don't? I asked, curious as to what her end game was.
If you don't, then Aunt Donna will have a long talk with her favorite nephew, Junior, and tell him some things I think he should know about his lineage.
She made sure to use air quotes and emphasize the words. You know I don't take kindly to threats. I stepped back. I couldn't believe what she was threatening to do. The only reason Chippy and I continued to keep in touch with her at all was that she was one of the few people left who could expose a family secret that we'd kept from our children for almost 40 years. If she revealed it, my family would be ripped apart, and my wife would most likely kill her. Chippy and Donna played nice, but the truth was they could not stand one another. I hadn't told Chippy I was going to see Donna that day because I didn't want the drama. But now that I was here, I was starting to regret not bringing her with me. If anyone could handle Donna and put her in her place, it was Chippy.
And I don't make threats unless I plan on using them, so I guess we're at an impasse, she said with her arms crossed defiantly over her chest.
I didn't dignify her with an answer, and Donna didn't wait for one. She put her designer sunglasses back on her face, stepped back, and closed the door. My men and I were left standing in front of her house like a bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses handing out copies of the Watchtower.
Larry, 13. After I brushed my teeth, I finished drying off and pulled on a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt, hung up my towel, and walked into my bedroom. The small apartment was quiet, except for the TV in the living room, where Mama was watching some old cowboy movie. I'd let the boys go out hoeing to celebrate the job they'd done at Lee's. I was proud of them, especially Kenny. I knew Curtis wouldn't disappoint me, but I was surprised by how into it Kenny had been. I didn't think he had it in him. I figured he was too much like his mother, but I can admit when I'm wrong. And I had been really wrong about him. He was a true chip off the old block. There was a lot of Larry Duncan in his DNA. Lying across the bed, I opened my wallet and pulled out a picture of Nene. The picture was about 20 years old, and I'd been carrying it around since the day she gave it to me. It was from the last real vacation we took together down in Virginia Beach, and she was wearing a sexy-ass red bathing suit. My goodness. She was one beautiful woman, and even now, with gray hair, a few extra pounds, and some wrinkles, she still did it for me. Damn, I missed my wife. I reached into a duffel bag and pulled out one of the prepaid cell phones we'd bought at Walmart. Powering it up, I dialed her cell phone number. Hello? I froze, savoring the sound of her voice. Hello? Hello? Kenny, is that you, baby? It was logical that she'd think Kenny would be the one to call her, because they'd always been so close. She'd be surprised by how much he'd changed in a week's time. I finally exhaled the breath I'd been holding, and she said, "Larry, I know that..."